We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. Why download the app? Because life is messy. We get stressed, anxious, have trouble sleeping, we work too hard, we deal with conflict, our hearts get broken, we worry about the state of the world. We meditate because we're human. Our app gives you hundreds of meditations from over 30 leading experts. It helps a lot. And if you haven't tried the app yet, you can now try it for free and explore a starter series plus a sample of some of our favorite guided meditations in the Discover collection. You may also want to check out our new meditation collections this year. Mindful eating, work, authentic leadership, and a special collection just for college students. There's also a new mindful work and sleep basics course. If you've already got the app, check out our new unguided meditation timer where you can create your own meditations with or without our brand new, pretty amazing music tracks. And don't forget the 8 free meditations on Alexa. Just ask her to enable Meditation Studio. I'm very excited to interview today's guest, Sid Krause, co-founder of Meditation Studio. Sid is also the chief marketing officer of Interaxon, the company that just acquired Meditation Studio, and the makers of Muse, the brain-sensing headband, designed to give you feedback as you meditate. More on this in the weeks to come, but it's a very cool way to learn and deepen your meditation practice. Stay tuned. Sid and I co-founded Meditation Studio a few years ago, and she's been an amazing friend and business partner. In this interview, she shares why she started meditating. Spoiler alert, she's a very smart type A personality, and how it's helped her at work and at home with her relationship with her husband, Neil. And she shares how she feels it's made her a better person overall, thanks to 2 simple tools. The first is about what she called impulse control, and the second is around impermanence, the idea that life is short and it's best to stay focused on the big picture. Simple, but very powerful. Sid's mission is to work with companies who do things to make human life and the planet just a little bit better. She wants to have a positive impact wherever she goes, whatever she does. I think she's doing a pretty good job at that. Now, here's Sid Krause. Sid, it is such an honor and pleasure to have you on Untangle today. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to start by asking you, how did you initially even discover meditation, or what was sort of your earliest discovery of it for your personal practice?
I'm not sure actually when I discovered meditation. I know specifically, I think it had always been in the universe of which I worked. I've always worked for fairly progressive companies and around people that were very interested in self-development and self-improvement. So meditation had always been, probably since my mid-20s, a part of the universe of which I operated, but it didn't become a part of my life until about 10 years ago.
And what happened then? 10 years ago.
I'm pretty famous for the people that have worked with me of working for a solid 5 years and then having a period of burnout and taking time off and then going back and starting a career that I love, working solidly and hard for 5 years and then having burnout. And I think I'd been through that rotation at least 3 times and I decided I didn't want to do it anymore. And when I looked at the changes I could make in my life that could help me improve work-life balance and overall kind of self-preservation, meditation was at the top of the list.
So let's talk about that for a second. So your personal style of working is to just go in really hard for a couple of years and then you burn out. And do you think a lot of people do this? I mean, have you talked to your friends about this? Is this sort of a common style of working in our culture?
Wow. The American culture, there's definitely big aspects of all in. Most of my friend circle is much better balanced than I am.
Yeah.
Most of them have had my friend Sunday, who, you know, worked for 25 years for the same company, very happily, very balanced, had a great home life, had a great work life. Really, all my friends have been much better at it than me. But I think it's everybody marches to the beat of a different drum. And I come from a very traditional Midwestern rural background, growing up on a ranch where just work was kind of a 24-hour part of our lives. And I think as I moved into a corporate environment, I took some of those attributes with me. And I think probably a lot of people can relate to that, that aspect of getting a lot of value and enjoying work, but not treating work as a component of your life instead of the main focus of your life.
Yeah. So you go deep, deep, and then you tend to burn out. And what does it feel like when you burn out? How do you know when you're burning out?
For me, it has always started usually physically, where there's just a component of kind of exhaustion and just starting to see physical signs, usually around my immune system. And then going through the self-assessment that just, I'm not inspired. I'm not enjoying my work.
Yeah.
Frustrated and alternatively, probably not that fun to work with. Hopefully all this
right.
has changed.
You get cranky and people are like, Sid, you're about to burn out, in case you can't see that. What do you find you need as sort of these mini sabbaticals?
Oh, 2 to 3 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Pretty consistently.
I'm going to ask you what you do in those 2 to 3 years a little bit later, but I want to understand, like, did you, when you were growing up in the Midwest, in Nebraska, on the ranch, did you have a spiritual practice at all or any kind of contemplative practice, any kind of prayer or meditation in your life?
My folks were very much of the ethos of letting us choose what aspect of religion or spirituality we wanted to adopt. Part of my family is very Catholic. And when I would go stay with my cousins there, I'd love to go to mass, mostly just do the ritual. I was a big fan as a kid of ritualism and dressing up and the Catholic church sort of filled that role. But I was never attracted to a traditional religious spiritual practice, but was always very spiritual. I think when you spend a significant amount of time out in nature, I've always felt very connected to there being a higher level of consciousness and a greater spirit, I would say. And that was definitely instilled for me in my childhood.
You said that you didn't start meditating actually, although it was sort of circling around you for many, many years in your work life, until 10 years ago. What happened again 10 years ago? I think you probably burnt out, which is what you said. How did you start getting into and really learning meditation so that it became a part of your life?
Yeah. So 10 years ago, I was in that burnout phase for sure. And we were living on a little island off the coast of France, an island called Jersey, one of the English Channel Islands. It was a great community, about 80,000 people on 40 square miles. But it was a funny place to want to start a meditation practice. It wasn't like I was in Manhattan or Boulder, right. Colorado. I knew that I wanted to start the practice and I just started asking around. I was involved with some nonprofits and I heard about really what was kind of the only formal meditation group on the island. And it was a group of people that met very informally every Wednesday. We had a small room above a law office, kind of a frumpy almost storage room. And I'd say there would be like 8 to maybe a dozen of us that would meet every Wednesday. And the teacher wasn't a formal meditation teacher, but he had learned enough and he would guide us through different styles of meditation practices every week. That was really my first experience with meditation.
Did you like it right away, or was it difficult for you at all to be able to sit in silence, if you will?
It was so informal. I would say that experience intrigued me. Yeah. I was very intrigued. The thing that I remember being very difficult was my first loving kindness meditation.
Was it hard to think of people, or just kind of hard to go in that visualization?
Super easy on the inner circles. I'd say I still struggle a little bit with it today. I remember just having the physical reaction as I had to wish loving kindness to people that I had ill feelings or distrust to. I remember just this whole tightening of my chest. And it was probably the first time I really was able to associate the physical reaction to some of the emotions that I was having and perhaps suppressing.
It's so interesting. For those of our audience that don't know about loving kindness, you sort of wish well for people that you love, and then it goes out in sort of concentric circles all the way to people that you don't love or that you really have ill feelings for, as Sid is saying. And so that is a really hard thing to do. So are you more comfortable with that now? It's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard, yeah.
I mean, if I'm being honest, the American political climate, I still struggle
right,
with.
Exactly. Exactly.
Certain people loving kindness. And it's funny, but I think it's so important when we look at what's going on in our American society and this kind of discord and really disconnection from people of different viewpoints, the act of loving kindness has probably never been more important.
Well, it's really hard to get into other people's shoes and understand how they're feeling and also feel compassion for them.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety, or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great. And this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, help.com/untangle. Now back to our show.
And we have such separate views. You come from a very small town where people do have different views from you and have different life experiences. What is that like for you when you are there and you're talking to people of different views? How do you stay sort of centered and compassionate? Or do you not?
If I'm in a good space, I try to understand where they're coming from. And in some ways, my hometown, that's easier because I grew up very similar. I have insight into their belief systems and what's important and perhaps what they're fearful of. And so to me, it's just understanding where they're coming from and then also kind of what facts they're basing their opinions on. So I think if I'm in a good space, that's what I do. I try to understand and try to appreciate what things are impacting their lives that are driving their belief system. In other cases, and he wouldn't mind me saying that, but my brother and I disagree a lot, and we just agree to disagree.
Right.
We both feel like we're well-educated and that our belief systems are well-developed, and yet we have different outcomes, but we love each other and support each other, so we just agree to disagree.
That's helpful when you're at Thanksgiving dinner to have that as your foundation. Yeah. And does meditation help you with that? And do you have a practice now that helps you to investigate some of these feelings or to just sit with them? What is your current practice?
You and I have talked about this, and I wish I had as good a meditation practice as you have, Patricia. but mine is definitely what I call on demand. There'll be periods of time where I know that I need to meditate and I'm meditating to either solve a problem like help me sleep or prepare for something that I know is going to be difficult or help me through a difficult period of time or a difficult situation. And during those periods of time, I can have a pretty regular practice. It could be every evening, every morning, or throughout the day. But then I can also kind of step away from the practice for a period of time. What I love about it is that I know it's there and I feel like I'm lucky enough to know how to invoke it and help me situationally or through very difficult times so that the meditation practice can support me.
Yeah, I think that's great, actually, because I always think of meditation as one of the tools in the toolbox. And I don't think we have to be so sort of precious about having to do it every day at exactly the same time and exactly the same position. I like what you're saying about invoking it when you need it. So you talked about your on-demand practice, and I know you go through so many different challenges in your everyday life, as we all do. Do you tend to do a silent meditation, or do you tend to like a guided meditation on a particular topic? Like you were saying, if you have trouble sleeping or you're having a difficult situation at work or at home.
I think there's probably two things. Definitely, I use our app and the content that you've helped develop. So definitely love guided meditations. Guided meditations are great for me around sleep. And then I've used especially our leadership collection a lot recently.
Yeah.
So that's a huge tool in my toolbox, but also just doing breath work throughout the day whenever, you know, I find myself getting frustrated or being at the airport and getting that delayed flight, it's just counting the three on the in-breath and three on the out-breath and doing that for a couple of minutes till I really feel myself calmed down. So I'd say that's a combination of both of those.
It's so funny. I was taking a flight a couple of weeks ago and it was like 3 or 4 hours late and I could not get calm until a little service dog came up to me in the airport. And all of a sudden that was like, okay, this is making me totally happy. So sometimes you need an alternative to your meditation practice. You said that you also had meditated with Thich Nhat Hanh, and that was one of your teachers early on. You did study with him, correct?
Yeah, that was a huge blessing. That was when I was just starting my practice and I was on that small island and sitting with a group on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
And I had gone to the leader and said, you know, how do I deepen my practice? Like, I want more. Like, one day enough isn't, being the very type A person that I am, it's not getting me there fast enough.
Yeah.
And we were lucky that we were just right off the coast of France, and Thich Nhat Hanh at the time was at Plum Village, which is in the, I think, the Bordeaux region of France. And so I was during my period of burnout, so I wasn't working, and I was able to go spend, I think, about a little over 2 weeks at Plum Village. He would do a daily Dharma talk and every few days lead us on a walking meditation. And I found that to be very profound. And at the same time, I was reading a couple of his books. I remember in particular, No Death, No Fear. And it was just a great deep dive, as well as just being around people that had a really strong practice who were very inspirational to me.
That sounds like such an amazing experience. Do you think that all of that was part of your inspiration to start Meditation Studio? Or tell us a little bit about how that came about for you personally.
The answer is yes. I started the meditation practice and then I was able to continue it when I went back to work and found that I was a different person as a leader and just a different person in general, and found that my meditation practice allowed me to combat some of my natural instincts that contributed to those kind of binge working and burnout phases. Fast forward, I was working at Gaiam, the yoga company, and we're looking at opportunities to expand wellness. We were very well known in the yoga space, but my immediate reaction was that there was a great opportunity for meditation. And part of that was just myself knowing, as much as I loved yoga, I didn't get on the mat as much as I should. And there was reasons for that. And most of the reasons, and we did a lot of studies at Gaiam, that people didn't get on the yoga mat didn't apply to meditation. And when I looked at it, I just felt like so much science behind the benefits of meditation. It's such a practice that can help everybody if it's presented in a very accessible way. So I would say me having a practice, knowing the benefits, being fortunate to work at a company in the health and fitness space.
So you developed Meditation Studio within Gaiam and then you acquired it to take it out on your own. And so what has that been like for you? How is it to be an entrepreneur in the meditation space, and what gives you the most joy about that?
I think what fuels me, I mean, having now had a career for 20 some years, I hate thinking about those numbers. The thing that fuels me to still get out of bed in the morning and really want to work is the opportunity to change lives. And I've been very fortunate working at Gaiam or working with Whole Foods Market and other companies to work with people that were doing things to make either the planet better or to make kind of human life better. And I think as an entrepreneur, it's never easy. And the fuel of knowing the good that you're doing, to me, very easily smooths out the bumps in the road.
And now we're taking a little break to tell you about our partner, Muse, the brain sensing headband. Muse is an amazing meditation tool that gives you accurate, real-time feedback on what's happening in your brain while you meditate. It guides your practice by translating your brain waves into the sounds of weather. Busy mind, you hear stormy weather. Calm, focused mind, you hear calm, peaceful weather. You'll also get personalized tracking so you can see how your brain changes as your practice evolves. You can take 15% off with this exclusive promotional code, Untangle15, when you check out at choosemuse.com. And for more information, go to choosemuse.com. Now, back to our show.
Let's talk about leadership for a second, because here you have this beautiful business that's helping to have an impact on the world. And I know this because we do this together. We get reviews or feedback from customers all the time that we're changing lives. And that's a big sort of at least win behind my sales. And I know it is for you as well. What is it actually like to be a leader of a company now, a growing company? And how are you balancing that binge to burnout now that you're actually, this is part of your business, meditation? Is there a big difference for you now as a leader?
Part of it is it's more connected. It's more personal. I also think meditation is more ingrained in my life than ever due to this being the business that we're in. You also are working with really good people, both our teachers and our customers. I think all of our stakeholders are in it for the right reason. You're in this great environment of goodness and people that are wanting to help and people that are wanting to improve their lives. And we're kind of the center of that wheel.
I love the way you put that. So like, that is such a beautiful way to think about this business and the ecosystem and our stakeholders. But we also know day to day, there are difficult conversations and there are complicated decisions. So how has meditation helped you be more of a mindful leader and maybe curb some of your reactions to things or just manage situations differently? How has that actually helped you to be a better leader?
Two answers. One is around impulse control. That very much reactionary aspect to us as humans. There's a lot of times where in a very kind of busy and fast moving entrepreneurial environment, where something will come across email or a phone conversation, and I'll have one of those crap, you know, like those reactions where I really want to react in a negative way. And I think my practice has given me a lot more skills. I'm definitely not perfect, but of being able to take a step back and either say, I need to sit with that.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is take comfort in Born Shoes. Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
Yep, or just at least being able to disconnect and ask the questions before issuing the judgment. So impulse control, giving that space between reaction and response has been huge. And then at a higher level, which I'll give a lot of credit to my time at Plum Village and reading and studying some of the work of Thich Nhat Hanh, is the discovery of impermanence. I mean, so many times in a business environment, there's a certain group of people that feel like it's a zero-sum game, so that in order for them to win, someone has to lose. And intuitively, I've never believed that to be the case. But the older I get and the more I think about impermanence, it helps me make better long-term decisions. And it helps me focus on the right long-term decisions and investing in relationships and knowing if this relationship and the decision I make today is never going to happen again, I want to make sure I represent myself the best way I can.
Yeah. When you talk about the discovery of impermanence, does that give you the sort of ability to take your ego out of the equation and not take things personally and think about the other person and the bigger picture? Do you think that's what's happening?
100%. Because we were working together when this happened, I think the biggest time I was able to notice the impact of the lesson of impermanence on my life was when I was very busy in my career, when I was an executive at Gaiam. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, my mom was ending her battle with cancer. Mm. And there was a lot of competing, in some ways, needs for my time and my focus. But yet when I looked at impermanence and where I needed to be, and if I only had that day one time, it made it very easy for me to make the right decision.
Did your meditation practice help you when your mom was dying? Were you able to be with your grief in a way that was helpful with your meditation practice?
Yes. I mean, that's helpful, but it will always be hard.
Yeah.
Right? The process of her passing, I would say my meditation practice was really focused on being in the present moment. That really changed after she passed. And then as I was going through the stages of grief, I would say that was a lot rockier road than what I was prepared for. You know, I think we've actually produced more grief meditations in the last 6 months.
Yes.
And I wish a lot of those had been with me during that phase. But I think so much of that is just being with your emotions and not suppressing them.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, like you're saying, it completely rocks your world. So I think that's when we tap into any tools that we have to help us with that. You and I have both gone through, and this is nothing like losing your mom, but you and I have both gone through losing our beloved dogs after both of us having them for 14 years over the last 4 months. And my little Oliver passed away a month ago, and I had listened to Melly O'Brien's Soothing Grief probably 10 times a day in the beginning, and then being with loss. And it sort of helps to get your mind and your heart in a different space. I think grief is complicated whenever we have a loss that's meaningful to us, but it is helpful. I mean, I'd love to hear from our audience about different ways that they handle grief, because I feel like it's such, if we love so deeply in our lives, we have no choice than to grieve. And I would love for us to be able to provide whatever support and tools we can. So was there anything that helped you when your dog died?
Yeah, when beloved Lano. Well, I think you'll probably remember when I spoke to you when we knew that the end was near for Lano. And I think you immediately sent me via text like 5 recommended grief meditations in the app. Yeah, and I think after going through the grief process with mom and having meditation, if there's anything I learned through that process, was just that the pain can be beautiful and sitting with it is important. I gave myself the freedom to just really, really mourn and have the physical emotions, the crying and the physical release of that, and just really be with it. Because at the end of the day, it was grief in one way is a celebration of the depth of the love that you had for what you just lost.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I am going to turn onto a happier note. Let's talk, because I know I can go deep down that rabbit hole very easily, as you know.
We'll both be the most uninteresting podcast episode
you've had. I know, right? Let's talk about
grieving our dogs.
Well, let's talk about, so we've been on this theme lately in our podcast about relationships. And I think relationships are very complicated. And as one of our recent podcast guests said, relationships are not for sissies. And you've been married for how many years now? Is it like
15 years.
Yeah, that's a big one. How do you think meditation has helped you in your relationship with your spouse, actually? Or has it?
Is he just so easygoing? I think, well, he is super easygoing.
That's helpful.
I'm thankful for that. But yeah. Meditation, to me, if you're going to be in a relationship, you first have to have self-love before you can love someone else. And I think my meditation practice just helps me be a better person. I think when you're a better person, you're easier for the other person to be with. So there's an element of that. Second is awareness. And ironically, you and I were supposed to have a meeting yesterday afternoon, and I reached out to cancel that because I realized I'm getting ready to go on a business trip tomorrow, and I hadn't been very present with my husband the last couple of days. So I think it's a combination of awareness and knowing the right way to react when you're aware of both what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong.
Does your husband meditate?
No, he wants to, and he knows he would benefit from it, but he's not there yet. Ironically, my 74-year-old cowboy father has just started meditating.
Oh, that's
using
awesome.
Our app. Hopefully my husband will be next in the great conversion.
What are some of your favorite meditations on the app?
I'm a huge fan of Chodo. So, I mean, I love Koshin and Chodo as people, and I love Chodo's meditations. I love his baritone voice, and Magic Carpet was always one of my favorite meditations. And then we produced a long version of that, which is in the Long Breaks collection. I've always loved Chodo's meditations. And then most recently, I'm really into some of our newer meditations. And one of my favorites today is Let Things Be by Ashley Turner. That has been an amazing gift for me, and I just think is so beautiful.
Yeah. And you also told me that when you were doing a recent big negotiation that you would listen to Chrissy Carter's Find Common Ground in the Leadership Collection, which you talked about earlier. So finding common ground was helpful for you.
Oh, absolutely. There, when you're in negotiations, much of the time, it's easy to look at only your perspective and get frustrated when the other party's not seeing things through your lens. And I think that entire collection is just beautiful and so well done with Chrissy. But definitely Finding Common Ground was huge. Fierce Focus, which I believe is that Cara Bradley's? But I just remembered it was about visualizing a fire in your belly. I used the favorites function. It became one of my go-to in my studio. The funniest thing is I actually use Franco Heke's sleep meditations for kids when I want to sleep. The current rotation, I'm lucky I can sleep pretty easily, but I love using his guided meditations as visualization, in particular ocean.
Yeah.
To help sleep when I'm traveling.
Oh, that's good to know. I have trouble sleeping too. So I tend to use his meditations and our other sleep meditations, but I've also started using the unguided timer with ocean wave sounds. So I will put that on for 2 hours and just go to sleep with the waves crashing.
It's fantastic, especially when you're landlocked in Boulder, Colorado.
Exactly. So is there anything else you want to share with our audience? Something you want them to know about you or meditation studio? Anything else that you'd like to share today?
I think of anybody that's interested in starting a practice or perhaps had a practice and strayed away from it, I think I'm one of the most unlikely people growing up in rural Nebraska on a ranch. And knowing me, if I can start a practice, if I can benefit from a practice, anybody can. And I think for me, 2 minutes a day can have a huge impact. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes a day can have a huge impact. I so encourage people to not go through kind of the challenges I went through, especially early in my career, of binge working and burnout and developing and embracing these tools to help improve their lives. I wish what I did at 35, I would have done at 25 and, and saved 10 years of trial and error.
Yeah, I hear you. I get to know and hear the Sid Kraus brain every day as we work together. And it's just such a pleasure and gift to get to know a little bit more of the heart and soul of Sid Kraus and to share that with our audience. So thank you so much for being with us today.
And thank you, Patricia. You're a joy to work with. And it's been so fun to go on this journey together. And I love what you've done with Untangle. So I'm so glad to finally be a part of it.
Yay, thank you. Thanks so much to Sid for being on Untangle today.
Check out meditationstudioapp.com and choosemuse.com to learn more about the great work that she's doing. If you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And if you have a minute, can you give us a review or rating for the podcast? It helps a lot. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store. We'll see you next week.